How are you today, buddy?
Yeah, I'm good. I think I'm good. I'm slowly leaning into this very bizarre way of life. At times it's like overwhelming, and then other times it's like, we're good, we got this. And you're like, ah, the economic system of the world is crumbling, and I'm here putting a bit of cheese on an omelette. Ladies and gentlemen, and also because we're inclusive, non-binary folk, welcome to the Golf Fizz Show. I'm Andy, at times the face slash the voice, but the brains behind the operation, I've said this before, I'll say it again, is Michael. What is your middle name? Morris. What is your middle name?
James.
Oh, same.
Oh,
How do
really?
we not know this?
You're AJ.
Yeah, and you're MJ. Oh, you're way better. Oh, that's way better.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, yeah, there's Michael J. Fox, but who else is an MJ? Oh,
Michael
Mike.
Jordan, Michael Jackson, the great Michaels.
You've reminded me that I need to bring up that I never get called Mike.
Yes, what's that about? Because I started calling you Mike early because I tend to with people just to build a bit of rapport. I realize this far too late in my life. I start giving them a nickname from the start, like Nicholas becomes Nick, becomes Nicky, becomes all sorts. How and then I start calling you Mike, and I didn't get good vibes.
To be honest, I don't mind it, and a lot of people call me Michael, Mikey, and I love it. I don't mind it at all. But if people would ask me what's your preference, I say Michael. It's a really silly reason. When I was much younger, we had some family friends. I won't name them, but there was a Mike,
I
and
won't
I.
name them, but his name was
I've
Mike.
given away half the clue anyway,
Yeah.
and he was much, much older. I mean, he was an old adult, so I just linked being older with with Mike. And also, like you've just sort of alluded to, a lot of the famous Michaels are Michaels. You don't Mike Jordan, Mike Jackson, Mike J. Fox. It just doesn't sound the same. So I always preferred Michael. I quite like the name. I don't know if there's any problem. People might have a problem with me liking my own name, but I like my name and not a big nickname person myself. But
I guess Mike feels a bit laddie, a bit sort of rugby club. He's like, oh, go down a couple of beers with Mike.
And you know me, and that's not
No,
me at all.
no.
I'm a quiet sake all by myself.
Sadly, that is true. That is true. But you got to admire a man who knows what he wants and knows what he likes. You know, you're sure within yourself, and I respect that.
But hang on a minute. You're Andy, Andrew, who, what, where,
Oh,
how?
actually, that was very good. I'm going to jump to that into a second. I should say, because your wife should listen to this podcast and say, tell us who the guest is early before you start rambling. So I'll quickly address that. Today, we're catching up with Andrew Jackson. He's the general manager of a great golf club here in New Zealand. I think it was rated by Golf Digest in the top 20 in the country. I think it was 12. I think that's what it was. But
Wow.
anyway, this is a world-class course. It is personally one of my favorite golf clubs. So we're going to get his thoughts on the whole situation at the moment, what he thinks this means for the golfing community, COVID-19, all that sort of stuff. So we'll catch up with him soon. But back to the real business, Andrew or Andy. Weirdly, an interesting thing there as well. When I was working in radio, I started working in radio at like, oh, what was it, 2010, 2011. I moved to Invercargill at the bottom of the South Island of New Zealand to start my job as making radio commercials. And I did like
Right.
7 months there. And in that time, I was doing a Saturday morning radio show, and it was very just to the Southland region, big region, about 100,000 people or so. That's big for New Zealand, but you know, no one really listened to it. I mean, why would they? It was awful. So I'd call, it was just like Saturday mornings with Andrew or something like that. Eventually, one of the guys who actually was my like really good mates and still is mate to this day, but it's different now because we're so far apart. But he left the breakfast show, and the breakfast show at that point was called Gretchen and James.
Richard and
Gretchen and
James.
James. Now, Gretchen is like, she's been there for years, like a real well-known name in the region. James left to go to the opposition radio station. So I put my hand up because no one else has moved to Invercargill that was really that keen to do radio. So I was like, I'll do it. And then I ended up on the breakfast show, and you couldn't have a breakfast show in the morning called Gretchen and Andrew. I mean, that sounds like a book club. That's not going to work. So
It does. It
yeah,
does.
no one's no. I do my favorite radio show is Who's That? Gretchen and Andrew. Said no one. We changed it to Andy. So I have a weird thing with the name because people who knew me prior to 2010, they call me Andrew. But after 2010, it's Andy. The other day, though, my dad called me Andy. Didn't like it.
Wow.
Weird. I know. I was like, I don't want to be that name. It's just a name. It is what it is. But there's an uncomfortable feeling I get with Andy. It feels a bit like wacky, like I'm that sort of, you know, Andy's the name of that dude, that sort of wacky jock type dude. That's what the impression I get, that Andy just feels a bit blah. So I only really do it to people now, but I don't like it from people prior to 2010. long-winded story, but you get the idea.
I love it. But you've kind of split your, you know, your personal and your public persona down to Andrew's the people that know you intimately, and Andy's kind of your public.
Yeah. Unintentionally, yeah. It's kind of gone that way. And I think Andy kind of works a bit more. And this, I mean, this sort of, we might have to change this to Andrew and Michael. Fiance Sarah, she calls me Andrew James, which is very British of her because she is British. I know if she says Andrew James, shit has hit the fan royally. Question today before we get to Andrew.
Yeah.
Can we just relive for a moment? Because I think we kind of forget how amazing this was. We reference this a bit because it's one of our key sort of memories within the sort of golf world at this point was the President's Cup in Melbourne last year, 2019.
Yeah.
Now what people may not know is prior to Michael and I engaging conversations around Golf Media, the company that, you know, that you've come up with and I've joined and all that sort of stuff, I said to you, I'll quit my radio career and I'll chase this crazy golf idea that you've got, provided you can get me in front of Tiger Woods within 5 years.
How did I do, Andy?
I would say it was like, was it 2 months? Maybe not even that.
Maximum.
We're at Melbourne at the President's Cup. You did get us into the media center and we spoke to the GOAT. We spoke to Blim and Tiger Woods. What was that like for you?
Well, no, I'm going to ask, what was that like for you? Because you achieved it, buddy. I mean, it was huge for me and we can go into that, but it was actually more exciting for me facilitating that for you at the time. Before I got the chance to speak to him myself, yeah. I was over the moon that we'd achieved that. And I was especially excited that you were getting that opportunity finally. So, no, tell me what it was like what was happening in your head when you got that.
It was very surreal. That's definitely one thing. When you see the man, if you've seen Tiger Woods live and maybe you've been lucky enough to go to a major or something like that, I'd seen him once before at the British Open at Hoylake in Liverpool. This is like 2014, maybe. I can't remember what year it was, but he was injured. He wasn't at his best at all. So I'd seen him in the flesh, but not up close. It was from a distance and behind galleries and all that. But to see him in the flesh up close, it really does something to you, doesn't it? Like he's sort of got this glow about him that it's like you kind of get an insight as to why people worshipped people. I know that seems very bizarre, but I actually mean that, like magnetizing and people that just have an aura about them.
Yeah, and it has this added pressure that you didn't quite twig at the time. That press conference had a global audience and that your questions were going to go out live globally. It was so nerve-wracking, wasn't it? And we were trading notes, what question to use, and I was kind of vetoing that one and adding to that one for you, and we were just kind of discussing what we wanted to do and other people asking questions which we thought were shite, and oh, we can do better than that, and God, there was a lot going on, wasn't there, before you got to talk to him?
And not to mention, just to paint the scene for those who weren't there, there's the media center where you're allowed in if you've got accreditation, which fortunately we were. Now, all the media that's there, they've been there, done that. There's only a handful of, you can tell, sort of new people in the scene that kind of excited about the stuff still. So people kind of sit at the back of this press conference. In walks Tiger Woods and Ernie Els, captain of the international team, Tiger captain of the US team. They sit down side beside each other. To the left off the camera is the media liaison. So that's just painting the scene for what you're saying there. Now, like you say, those big cameras at the back of the media center, I didn't know that those were live on TV. I thought they were just recording it and going to chop it down and post it online somewhere. Thank God you were there, actually. And I didn't give you enough credit here, because if you weren't there, can you imagine what I would have said? I mean, goodness me. I reckon if you weren't there, I would have said something. I don't know. I would have tried to be that wacky guy that says the question to make the room laugh, not realizing that I've just torched my entire career, like that sort of guy. So yeah, bless you. I was sort of running questions by you, like, no, that, remember that, be careful with that.
Well, I could feel the eyes of the more senior journalists there on us, because they were looking at us going, never seen these guys before. What the hell are you doing here? Yeah, there was kind of that going on as well. And of course, the other thing I was trying to do was film it. I had a little handycam type thing in my hand, and I was trying to record you speaking to him, because I didn't know that it was going to be recorded either. So I thought, this is our only chance to capture this as well. So
you were right. And you're like, just don't try and do anything too tricky now. Just get something out that's going to be of value and respects this whole situation and maybe complimentary or something like that. So we came up with a question, and that little moment, the journalist from God knows where over here asking some mundane vanilla bullshit, and then you get the microphone and it's like, oh, it's time to speak. And then I just remember uttering these words, Tiger. And then he's looking around because he's got the speakers behind him and he can't obviously see where that voice is coming from. So I was like, Tiger, front left. And when he hits eyes with you, that's some scary shit. I was like, dude, you were the only thing I skipped class for. And here I am, just a dude from New Zealand. And I've got your attention for the next 30 seconds. I was like, I'm going to lap this shit up.
And aren't you super aware of your own accent at that time?
Yeah, you sound like, you know, we talked about this in one of the early episodes. You kind of feel a bit sort of hicky, a bit scum, because there's all these sort of like, you, like PGA people in really nice clothes and nice hats. And you're kind of just like, all right, we might need to tight up our game.
Wait a minute. We were wearing our nice polos. Come on.
Yeah, but then you hear our accent and then they're like, oh, what's this? This isn't Aussie. This is some weird thing. yeah, the question was all right. Now, I think it was good. We did a good job. I think we respected it. Now, you said the footage or maybe the audio. We could play the audio here next episode at the start.
Yeah, we could do that.
How about I'll go for a wee and then we'll get Andrew Jackson. How's that sound?
Looking forward to it.
Joining us now, general manager of one of the top clubs in the country. And if you haven't played here, it is an absolute treat of a course, although it's closed at the moment. But when it reopens, oh, this man, general manager, Andrew Jackson. Hello. How are you, good sir?
How are you going, Andy?
Yeah, good, good. And Michael's on the other end there as well.
Yeah, hi, mate.
Hey, Andrew. Great to have you on, buddy.
Yeah, cheers. Good to hear from you.
Now, we'll start on a positive note. Andrew, why do you think your club nails it so much? Because you really are, I guess, a framework for other clubs to probably work off on how to succeed in this strange modern time of golf.
Yeah, well, we're pretty lucky that we're actually a links golf course, so we stay dry during the winter. We've got a very good irrigation system for the summer, so we're pretty green in the summer as well. You know, we're fortunate to be a brilliant golf course both summer and winter. A lot has to be said for the guys who actually laid out the course in the first place and then redeveloped it when the sea was coming in a bit close. We had to move the course inland, and the course is now so mature. It's absolutely beautiful. It's just such a mint course to play on.
Was it a collaborative effort, Andrew, in terms of the design, was it?
Yeah. There was basically some members and the board at the time.
Fantastic. And how old is Muraway Golf Links?
I think it goes back to 1957. There was a meeting by a bunch of guys from Remuera who decided they needed somewhere dry to play on in the winter. So they picked some land and did a deal with the council and laid out a course. And it was opened first in 1960, which is actually when I was born.
Oh, wow. Wow. Well, I've long said this, Andrew, because I was getting back into golf a few years back in fewer clubs, just sort of dancing around playing green fees, and they were all wet, as you said. And I thought, oh, well, I'll go challenge myself. I hear there's a good course out on the coast called Muraway. Came out there and was so taken aback by it. This is long before, you know, golf media and our podcasts and videos and all that sort of stuff. And I really started saying to all my mates, this course is the best value for money I think you're going to find anywhere. Because you're offering a world-class experience, but the money, like, you're not charging crazy amounts.
No, we feel we're pretty competitive, although one of the first things I did when I became manager was to increase the green fee prices, so we're ridiculously low, and we were giving away too much, and the price were increased, but still competitive. So if you're, for instance, an affiliated golfer from New Zealand, you will pay $70. And we've got a very good members guest rate of $50 as well. So, you know, we look after the members that way so they can bring their friends in from overseas and still get a reasonably priced game of $50, which I think is exceptional value.
And what do you think of golf in New Zealand as a sport compared to, I know you're originally from Northumberland, so UK. You know, what do you see as the differences between the two? Because there's all sorts of anecdotes thrown around.
Yeah, well, actually, the one big question that I get asked all the time, I've been in the country now for 27 years, they say, why did you choose New Zealand? Well, basically to play 12-month golf. That's why I came here. You can't play golf in Northumberland in the winter. If you are, you don't really have a home life because it's freezing cold. You get dressed up, you look like the Michelin. You got so much clothes on. You got the waterproofs. You got the woolens on.
Yeah, and when it comes to sort of the attitudes of golfers, is there anything in particular you notice as well within sort of the culture?
No, they're pretty similar from where I'm from, Northumberland. It's pretty down to earth sport, and New Zealand too. There's, you know, it's a sport for everybody. Further south in England, you might find it's a bit more elitist, but up north and into Scotland as well, it's a sport for everybody. And that's where New Zealand really stands head above everybody else in the world, I think. Mm. You know, it's a very, very inclusive sport that, you know, anybody can play, from kids up to 90-year-olds. You know, we've got guys in the 90s who play at Muraway, you know, and it's a brilliant sport. for anybody to get into.
And obviously, Andrew, elephant in the room, COVID-19, we're all in isolation. Golf courses, you had to lock down your course a few days ago now, and that led to all sorts of cancellations. Yep. How's the state of play for you at the moment?
Yep, we've obviously closed down, and we're not allowed to touch the course at all, although there are some players who are breaking the rules at the moment. We've seen a few people on the course.
Oh, really?
Yep, I think it's okay to go on there, even though there's no pin on the green or any tee boxes. They even got out there on the push bikes. It's a pretty sad situation. We've got to, fingers crossed, we're going to be okay in 4 weeks' time, unless the government can allow us to do a minimal amount of maintenance. Yeah, we've closed down for 4 weeks. I have checked the course, and the greens do still look pretty good. Although on Wednesday, that was when we were supposed to have the pro-am for the Ortex Murawai Open. And that was the same night that the level four was raised. The greens were probably running at 12. Oof, on Wednesday.
Wow.
And if you go up there now, they're probably running at something like 7.
Mm, yeah.
In 4 weeks' time, they'll probably run at 6 inches, not bad for it.
So, Andrew, I know New Zealand Golf is pushing really hard, yeah, with some support around getting, as you say, some minimal maintenance happening. Do you think you've got a good chance of getting that maintenance back in the next few weeks, Andrew?
Yes, I do. I'm pretty confident that will happen. There is a bit of a queue of applications at the moment to the government to be able to relax the rules slightly, and golf in general is in the queue. I realise that, yep, health and safety, you do need to have two people in case there's an accident with one. I'm pretty sure one person could actually sit in the clubhouse and clean the windows while the greenkeeper's outside mowing the greens. And if there's anything happens, then at least there's two people on site. You know, there's ways around it.
So I imagine, Andrew, that a golf course can be saved if the greens are savable. But if your greens are gone, you're really screwed, aren't you?
Yeah, well, I think 90% of the greenkeeper's work is actually in the greens.
Yeah,
the fairways and rough can be left. The greens and surrounds, I mean, they really do need to be taken care of. The tees, you probably leave them for a little while because you do ball on top of a tee, so it's not going to make too much of a difference. But the greens and surrounds do need to be constantly worked on. And not just mowing. We spray regularly for disease. The dew content at this time of the year, when you go and see the golf course in the morning, there's so much dew on the greens that could spread disease as well. So that needs to be getting rid of straight away too.
Mm. And what's the mental health like of your greenkeepers at the moment through all this?
Oh, pretty good. They're obviously itching to get on there and do something, but they're also mindful. And the course superintendent in particular, he's very mindful that they need to stick to the rules and lock down. So they're stuck between a rock and a hard face, basically. They want to get on there and look after that course, but at the same time, they need to look after themselves and the families.
Mm. What do you think will be some of the long-term ramifications of this whole thing on the golfing community?
Well, myself personally, I think it's tourism that's going to probably be the biggest problem. A lot of golf clubs do rely on tourism. Ours does as well, although we do a lot of green fees that come from New Zealand. But I can see that the borders and the incoming flights, especially from places like China and the USA, they're going to be pretty few and far between. We're going to see less tourism. We have probably a 50-50 split between overseas tourists and New Zealand tourists coming to the course to play. So that's where we could see a bit of a hit.
Andrew, if there are clubs listening now, maybe managers, people who work at golf clubs that may not be doing as well as you guys, what sort of things would you recommend to people that are kind of work it out?
Well, quit your job and join Murawai. I can't really give anybody else any advice on that because I'm pretty lucky to have my job at Murawai. It's like we've got a masterpiece to work on, you know, and it's already laid out there for me. So I'm basically pushing how good the course is. I think for everybody is just to not so much dwell on the negatives of your course, really push the positives. You know, if you've got a tree-lined golf course and it's beautiful to play and it's like walking in the park, then push that. You know, don't dwell on the negatives. I'm very lucky to have Murawai as my course and as a job as well. So I'm working there as well as playing. Mm. So I'm spending 7 days a week there, really. Well, that's before this this virus hit.
Mm.
But I don't really have any advice for other managers. Well, the only thing I can say is I'm pretty lucky to be working where I am.
Andrew, could you describe what your days are currently looking like at the moment? Obviously, you've got a family. Are you still, clearing emails? How are you keeping yourself occupied and sane?
Still working from home. We do a lot of admin work from home anyway, although we're not sending invoices out at the moment. It wouldn't be good timing to do that, but we do still have a lot of admin stuff to do. So there's a couple of hours of that in a day. Good opportunity now to update the website. I think a lot of clubs' websites have sort of a little bit out of date now because you just don't get the time to do it. Mm-hmm. Once you start it, you get interrupted. So it's update the website. And that's basically it. Update the Facebook pages, keep the members informed. So we do a newsletter every week. We do have over 900 members at Mirawai. So that's 900 bosses that I've got. Keen believer in listening to everybody. Probably 98% of our members, we've got a high percentage, who are really happy with the club. But there's always something to work on. There's always something to improve on. And yes, you do need to listen to everybody.
Obviously, one of the huge components of a club is the corporate support that you get. And how have you found, the people that support your club from a financial perspective in terms of helping getting you through this and maintaining a good close relationship during this time?
Extremely supportive. We've got a very, very good relationship with our corporate sponsors. They're mainly local guys. The main sponsor is Ortex, and they've got things to think about themselves with the Warriors and having a lot of staff. So they've got things to think about other than the golf club. But we've got a really, really good set of local suppliers who are also sponsors. We're very lucky to have wineries and breweries on the doorstep. So quite a few of them are supporting the club, not only in supply and produce, but sponsoring the pennant teams, sponsoring the Mirawai Open, for instance. And it's a 360 with those guys. They're very supportive of the club because they are local.
Awesome stuff, Andrew. Well, we really appreciate your time. But that said, we also know that you've probably got plenty of it at this point. So
not too much. I've got two daughters there.
Oh, gee. Okay, I take that back.
who need to be looked after. One of them has got a broken leg and a broken arm, and the other one had a golf injury. So a pretty hectic household at the moment.
Man, she must be hitting it long if she's got a golf injury.
Yes.
Awesome, mate. Well, thank you very much for your time nonetheless. Really appreciate it. All the very best getting out of this crazy situation.
Cheers, guys, and stay safe.
Good bloke, Andrew Jackson. And that's one of the things about New Zealand. I know he said $70 for a round. That may seem like a lot for the most of New Zealand. We're kind of used to spending between, say, $10 and $40 for a round, and that gets you on probably a large percentage of the courses in the country. When you put that on around the world, for the quality of that course, for that amount of money, is just nuts. And that's what makes golf in New Zealand great. That's why I love it, because you can have these amazing experiences and it just doesn't torture your bank. It's awesome.
Yeah, and I always say to people, it's for four plus hours of entertainment. I mean, that per hour, that's nothing, or with your friends and the amount of exercise you're getting and what you're seeing. And honestly, like you just said, if you see Mirawai in person, it is utterly spectacular.
My partner lives in the northwest of England, or not generally, she's from there. So we went back there to visit her parents. Anyway, she's not far away from Royal Birkdale, and that course cost me $500 New Zealand for a round. Now, don't get me wrong, it's obviously got the history and it is worth that. I'm not saying it's not, but it just gives you a bit of perspective, because if you were just looking at quality of golfing experience, there actually isn't a lot of difference between Royal Birkdale and tier two courses in New Zealand. It's just the history you're paying for there. So that's really all the courses in New Zealand are missing, I guess, is history, because they're not that old. Anyway, so there we go. We'll see you next time on The Golfers Show. It's been fun. I've actually been doing this in bed, believe it or not. I have been wearing clothes, but that can change.
That was my next question.
Watch this space. Oh, God. Okay, oh God. See you next time.
It's definitely time to go. Bye.